We're in the 29th chapter of Job. I'm hoping to get four chapters done. After Job has finished his soliloquy here, we're going to visit with Elihu. And then finally, Jehovah God shows up, the Lord God Almighty. And he's got the last word. Well, he always has the last word, but here it's recorded. And that's really the high point of the book, of course. His friends, at this point, they're not saying much, and that's kind of good. We've heard about enough of them already anyway, right? And they don't really have the answer. You know when desperately bad things happen to a person? You generally don't have the answer. I was talking to my mom. Mom's in a hospital, and I'm not sure how much she wants me to share, so it's not life and death. But it's not good. When you're admitted now, it's usually because it's more than a hangnail, you know what I mean? They don't admit you for the sniffles. So I don't want to say anything. But she's talking about a sister-in-law, one of my sister-in-laws, will be one of her daughters-in-laws, who's been battling cancer for about 8 or 9 years now. And it's, you know, everything goes good, and then it goes bad, and then it goes good, and then it goes bad. My sister's got, you know, cancer. And why do these things happen? Why does cancer happen? What's the point? You know what I mean? I don't know. So when somebody has a bad report from the doctor, and they're looking for answers, I know God is God, and I know He's worthy to be worshipped and worthy to be praised. And sometimes I got to tell you something. I don't know. The answer is like when you ask the question, "Why is this and why is that?" And Job's like, why did I lose everything I've ever owned, including my 10 children who died all of a sudden? Don't be cavalier. If Job has taught us one thing, it taught us this. Don't be sitting there. Well, you know, all things work together for good to them that love the Lord. By the way, that's a true verse. And having said that, shut up. I don't think anyone needs theology at that point. I mean, I really don't. I don't think that's what they're looking for. I think they're looking for a hug. I think they're looking for a Kleenex. I think they're looking for a shoulder to cry on. There's no, we don't know. We don't know this. We don't know why he's gone through all this. Now, in chapter 29, he's taking a walk down memory lane. And by the way, I discourage this for the most part, on principle. The good old days weren't always that good. You know what I mean? And you can only live in the present. Now but I'm not trying to be dismissive with the sense like he's, right now the present's pretty ugly. And he's saying, well, I remember the time when, yeah, I can see that. I can see why he would do that. Let's just jump right in. Moreover, Job continued his parable. It's called a parable. And he said, oh, that I were as in months past. See, I'm telling you, it's a walk down memory lane. He's reminiscing. As in the days when God preserved me, when his candle shined upon my head, and when by his light I walked through darkness. I was in the days of my youth, when the secret of God was upon my tabernacle, when the Almighty was yet within me, when my children were about me. He's saying, you know, back when I had the kids, right? When I washed my steps with butter, and the rock poured me out rivers of oil. Now, I think that's hyperbolic language there. You generally don't wash your steps with butter. I think he's talking about a time when the blessing of God was upon him so much that butter was like mere water, an instrument to wash in. And look at rocks poured out there. Rocks poured out rivers of oil. You know, if you get like a handful of rocks and you press them up, oil just generally doesn't come out of them. It comes out of the ground, but not generally out of rocks per se. So I think it's hyperbolic language. When I went out to the gate through the city, when I prepared my seat in the street, young men saw me and hid themselves. The aged men arose and stood up. Now that's backwards. You're supposed to stand in the presence of the aged. He said, when I showed up, even the old men stood up. Out of respect is the idea. Is he bragging? I don't think so. I think he's talking about the way things were at one time, and he's reminiscing, and he's wishing that it was that way again. His friends are saying, listen, basically this, you're a sinner, and you need to repent. And he's saying, This is fraught with legal language. He's building a case here. Here it says parable. It's more of like, you know, if there was some like attorney, I would be able to, you know, prepare my case before a judge who would acquit me of all these things you're saying. Because his friends aren't saying it. Here's the thing, let another's lips praise you. Don't brag yourself up. Even if it's true, it's still gross. You know what I mean? We like confidence, but we don't like cockiness. We don't like arrogance. I come by it really honestly. I've always found arrogance very close to me. Not for a good reason. I mean, there's no good reason for arrogance. It's just I can switch on that switch real easy. I don't know. But here he's not saying this like trying to brag, trying to show you how wonderful, how great I was. Again, he's just visiting the past. He's saying, and he's, look at me now. Look what's happened to me. But you guys think it's because I've been a bad guy. Well, let me tell you about what it's like. Because he's going to make his case and he's going to talk about what a bad guy he was. Now, he never says I'm sinless, okay? But his point here is like, what's happening to me, there's not a cause and effect here. The princes refrained talking and laid their hands on their mouth. In other words, everyone gave deference to me in my language, my speech. The nobles held their peace and their tongue cleaved to the roof of their mouth. Again, hyperbolic language, but it's making the point. When the ear heard me, then it blessed me. When the eye saw me, it gave witness to me. Because there's a reason for all this. Listen, let me tell you why this happened. Because I delivered the poor that cried and the fatherless and him that had none to help him. And so his friend said, that's exactly why you're being punished. He said, that's not true. I was a champion of the downtrodden. There was the fatherless, the orphan, right? And him that none to help him, well, I delivered the poor that cried. The blessing of him that was ready to perish came upon me, and I caused the widow's heart to sing for joy. Would to God that all the church of Jesus Christ could say these things in truth. I think one of the things why people aren't getting saved in droves, well, because they have a desperately wicked heart. Let's make sure of that. But because we're not wowing them with our behavior. We're just like they are, except light. Here's the world, here's the church, which is the world light. Their music is like out there, and we have their music light. Everything they do, like to the way out there extent, we just kind of tame it a little bit, and we do the same thing. They have nightclubs, we have nightclubs. Christian nightclubs. They have that dating service, we have dating service. We're doing the same thing they're doing. We're reading the same periodicals. We're watching the same TV programs. We're not wowing anybody. And I think, like, if we were the ones who delivered the poor, the fatherless, and we caused blessing to come upon the widow, I think people would notice. I put on righteousness, and it clothed me. My judgment was as a robe and a diadem. I was eyes to the blind, and feet was I to the lame. I was a father to the poor. He's saying, boy, you're right, full of yourself, aren't you, Job? He's, no, I don't think that's it at all. I think he's just making his case. You're saying all these things, but none of those things are true. I was feet to the lame. I was a father to the poor. And the cause which I knew not, I searched out. Would to God that we'd all say that. We read a headline, and we know everything about everything. We just read the byline. No, God says, no, we're supposed to search out a matter. Okay, I hear what you're saying. Let me check it out and see if it holds water. I just believe the last person who talked to me because nobody ever lies, right? No, he's saying, I searched a matter. I got to the bottom of things. You know, people would come to me and say, hey, you know, this one delivered me from my adversary. They've done this and this and this. No, I get to the heart of the matter, and I found out what the real score was. You know what I mean? Have you ever done that? Of course, we've all done that. We hear somebody's come to us and they tell us this and this and this and this. Well, it's very often that and that. It's true, and they have no reason to lie, and he tells us. Now, sometimes, you know, people do this preemptorily, and they say, oh, this and this and this and this, and then you go and check with the other one. No, it wasn't like that at all. I didn't leave them. They kicked me out. And the reason they kicked me out is because they wanted to, or you know what I mean? When you get to the heart of the matter, it's not, at first blush, it was all in one direction. He was a bad guy, or she was the bad guy. And then, but when you get to the bottom of it, it's usually You know what I'm saying? I say that guardedly. Sometimes he is the bad guy. Sometimes she is the bad guy. You know what I mean? Sometimes you hear it right from the horse's mouth first, and that's what you get, and that's the real deal. But why be hasty? Let's get to the bottom of things. He said, I used to search out a matter. And I break the jaws of the wicked and pluck the spoil out of his teeth. Again, he's talking about jurisprudence. Was he a judge? Yeah. That language about him knowing about being about the gates of the city, that's the idea, like he was an assemblyman, a judge, as you would call it. We see this in the ancient culture. You know, that was the gates of the city, that was city hall. That's where judgment was handed down. That's where war plans were made. You know, when Jesus says, the gates of hell won't prevail against the church. He's not thinking about gates chasing the church down the street. You know what I mean? He's talking about the stratagems, the councils of hell will not prevail against the church. And indeed it hasn't in 2,000 years. I break the jaws of the wicked. Is that a good thing? Yeah. I wish more wicked got their comeuppance to the point where people didn't dare to be wicked anymore. You know, a lot of times I hear this, you know, like the judge, don't you do that again. If you do that again, you're going to be back in my court, and I'm going to be saying, don't you do that again. Wow, that's, I don't think I'll mess with you. Oh, that's severe. But where's the punishment? At some point you have to, when you break the law, don't you have to be punished so that, I mean, if it was severe, people would stop doing, I mean, I'm not saying, 30 days in an electric chair for jaywalking. I'm not that law and order crazy guy. I'm just the punishment should fit the crime so that nobody should ever rape anyone twice. It was a capital offense in Israel. You're in front of a judge on your second or third rape conviction. That's broken. America's. We're way broken. We don't understand. And he's like, no, not in my court. No. When I break the jaws of the wicked. I pluck the spoil out of his teeth. Nobody's got unrighteous gain in my court, is what he's saying. Then I said, I shall die in my nest, and I shall multiply my days as the sand. Yeah, not so fast there, buddy. My root was spread out by the waters. Kind of reminds you there of Psalm 1. And dew lay all night upon my branch. By the way, he didn't ever read Psalm 1. That would be hundreds and hundreds, maybe 1,000 years or more after this. Remember, he's probably at the time of the patriarchs. He might have lived at the time of Abraham. He might have been a contemporary of Abraham, or maybe even before Abraham. Obviously, he's after the flood. He makes mention of that. Other than that, we don't exactly know where he was. But he doesn't mention Israel. He doesn't mention the law. He doesn't mention, you know, the tabernacle or anything like that. Or so he doesn't mention the Ten Commandments. So it's all obviously it's before all that. My glory was fresh in me. My bow was renewed in my hand. Unto me men gave ear and waited and kept silence at my counsel. After my words they spake not again, and my speech dropped upon them as they waited for me as for the rain, and they opened their mouth wide as for the latter rain. You know, it's like kids, when it's raining out, and they open their mouth up and catch raindrops. He says, that's what my words were like. You know, kids, catching rain, you know what I mean? My words were a blessing to them is what he was saying. Refreshing and a blessing. They waited for me as for the rain. If I laughed on them, they believed it not, and the light of my countenance they cast not down. I chose out their way and sat chief and dwelt as a king in the army, as one that comforteth the mourner. Okay, I was like a king in the army. Why? For conquest? No, so that I could comfort the mourners. I mean, I had power, but I used it for good. I used it for comfort. I used it to reach out. And you see, he's got all this compassion. The poor, the fatherless, the widows, you know, the ones who are seeking justice. I showed up. I helped them out. You think God's getting me for all that stuff? You think worms are invading my body? You think I got this like high fever? You think I'm covered with boils? I lost all my kids because I was helping out the widows and the orphans? It's a good point, Job. You know, this is what he's saying. He's making a strong case here. And if he's dwelling as a king in the army, if he's got that much power, it's so he can wield it for good and to help the downtrodden. But now, chapter 30, but now they that are younger than I have set me in derision, whose fathers I would have disdained to have set with the dogs of my flock. You know, their dads, I wouldn't even hire them to be shepherds, to hang out with my dogs out in the flock. And now they're laughing at me, is what he's saying. And I don't think this is sour grapes so much as just he senses the irony. You know, it was one time when I spoke, everyone was just waiting like for these pearls of wisdom to drop out and bless them. And now I speak and they laugh, they hold me in derision. Them whose dads I wouldn't even hire as my shepherd. That's not a compliment, okay? He's saying I wouldn't even put them in my employ, in the lowest of my employment ranks. Yea, whereto might the strength of their hands profit me, in whom old age was perished? For want and famine they were solitary, fleeing into the wilderness in former time, desolate and waste, who cut up mallows by the bushes and juniper roots for their meat. I have no earthly idea. And I did look it up. They were driven forth from among men. They cried after them as after a thief, to dwell in the cliffs of the valleys, in caves of the earth, and in the rocks. He's still talking about the younger ones that have him in derision, and he's talking about them, okay? I have the idea that the language is poetic, and it's derisive, in the idea that they're dwelling in cliffs of the valleys, in caves of the earth, and in the rocks. He's not talking about people who are living wealthy and well-to-do and flourishing. He's talking about people ne'er-do-wells and the off-scouring of society. And they're holding me in derision is kind of his idea. Again, just the irony of it all. Among the bushes they brayed. Now he's thinking, well, don't donkeys bray? I think that's entirely his point. Among the bushes they bray. Under the nettles they were gathered together. They were children of fools, yea, children of base men. They were viler than the earth. And now am I their song, yea, I am their byword. All this to say this. He goes this whole big thing here. He said, I can't believe. Look at them. And he draws a picture, a word picture. Again, I don't know all. I'm not exactly sure what he's trying to say. When he says, if I call your speech braying, I'm not trying to bless you, okay? You don't understand that, right? I'm making a statement about you. You're a donkey when you speak to me. So all this, and he's saying, and at the end of he's saying, now I'm their song, their byword. They abhor me. They flee far from me and spare not to spit in my face. I told you, we were talking about spit last two Sunday mornings. Spit in my face is not something that would bless somebody. Spit in the ancient culture, same as spit in this culture. Don't spit in people's face unless it's go time and you're ready to, you know, start throwing punches. So when Jesus uses that as healing, it's not something we can't look at that like, you know, because we talked about last couple weeks ago, like was it curative power and spit, the spit of a holy man? No, Jesus just chooses to do that. Why? I don't know. But the other thing too is, I know a lot of people claim that they know. Clark, is it Adam Clark? I think it is, one of the noted guys. And he was saying where Jesus spit in the guy's eyes, it's because his eyes were like kind of glued shut, and he used them like an ointment to like loosen everything up. And I'm thinking like, get out! How about like water or something? How about if the guy just like opened his eyes? I mean, if your eyes were kind of like welded shut a little bit, you think you'd kind of like work them until you could open them up? You know, you ever wake up and you get that crusty kind of stuff, then you kind of blink a few times and it's gone. That would work a lot better than somebody spitting in your eye. You know what I mean? I'm thinking like, so people offer these suggestions. Here, he's saying they spit in my face, and he's saying they weren't blessing me when they did that, okay? Just again, we talk about spit a lot here because it's Calvary Chapel, you know, and it's kind of a fun thing to talk about. We talk about all the things that, you know, make my wife squirm in her seat. I love that. When she's squirming, I'm having a high time. I want to know, because I'm not quite as mature as I'd like to be. But anyway, let's keep going. Because he hath loosed my cord and afflicted me, they have also let loose the bridle before me. Upon my right hand rise the youth. They push away my feet, and they raise up against me the ways of their destruction. They mar my path. They set forward my calamity. They have no helper. They come upon me as a wide breaking in of waters. In the desolation they roll themselves upon me. Terrors are turned upon me. They pursue my soul as the wind, and my welfare passeth away as a cloud. My welfare, all that thing, all that stuff I had, all the wealth, the that He was the richest man of the East. He had all this stuff, but it passed like a cloud. It was like, you know, it was here today, gone tomorrow. You know, this rainstorm that rains, you know, clouds up and rains all over you, and then it's gone. And he's talking about that's how wealth is. You know, we're talking about it this morning. People set their lives on accumulating wealth. It's all earmarked for destruction. And what are you going to give at the end of your life? What are you going to give in exchange for your soul? And he's saying, like, he said, he came at the same conclusion. He says, wealth? My welfare? It passed away like a cloud. You know, big strong wind and everything I had was gone. And now my soul is poured out upon me. The days of affliction have taken hold upon me. My bones are pierced in me and in the night season, and my sinews take no rest. It was like this before, and now it's like this. He's comparing. He was taking a walk down memory lane, and now he's thinking, now look at me. Now look at what's going on. And he keeps doing this throughout this part here. By the great force of my disease is my garment changed. It bindeth me about as the collar of my coat. He hath cast me into the mire, and I am become like dust and ashes. I cry unto thee, and thou dost not hear. I stand up, and thou regardest me not. Now, is that true? No, it's not. It's just, what does he know? He knows that he's been praying for deliverance, and so far it hasn't happened. Again, the person going through great suffering, and none of us are going through suffering like this. Okay, let's lighten up just a little bit. No one's going through suffering like this. What do we know in that situation? Here's what we know. That God hasn't answered our prayers yet. That's all we know. We pray for healing, and sometimes we don't get healed. Sometimes we get worse. And then you pray for somebody that they won't die, and then sometimes they die. Well, I don't know what to do in a situation like that. God's God, I'm still going to worship him. Say, well, what's the benefit? What's the sense? If he can't deliver, oh, I didn't say he couldn't. I didn't say I chose not to in that situation. And if he calls you home to be with himself, isn't that kind of healing? Because here it's kind of like yucky a lot of times. I mean, I'm not ready to go too quick before my time. He's got work for us here. But I mean, like, you know, if the trumpet sounds, hey, I'm ready. It's like, I got unfinished business to do. No, I'm ready. I got, you know, I got my ticket punched. I'm ready to go. What have we left that hasn't been done? By the way, if you feel that way, you should do whatever it is that you feel like you have to do, because, like I say, it could be any day. We never know, you know, so. So he's talking about then, he's talking about now. He's cast me in the mire and become like dust and ashes. I cry unto thee, and thou dost not hear me. You don't know that, Job. He does hear you. He's heard everything, and he's going to introduce himself at the end of the book, and he's going to testify that he's heard all that stuff. I stand up, and thou regardest me not. Thou art become cruel to me. With thy strong hand thou opposest thyself against me. That's a strong statement to God. That's how he feels. It's honest, but it's not true. It's not true. You know, again, the problem with the book of Job is Job never read it. He never read chapter 1 and 2. He doesn't know what's going on in heaven. He doesn't know that, you know, Satan's coming to God and accusing, you know, oh yeah, God, you ain't worthy to be worshiping of yourself. You bought Job's loyalty by blessing him. But Job doesn't know any of this. And he feels it's just cruelty. It's not. You know, in the grand scheme of things, where's Job now? Heaven. And what does that look like to him? Pretty good. He's having a good day. He's had good days for a lot of days in a row, and he hasn't had a bad day. And if you would remind him, hey, Job, remember when you were on earth and you lost all this stuff? And I guess, yeah. Seems like a dream now. Boy, that was such a long time ago. Yeah, it was pretty hard back then. Well, how do you feel about that now? Well, I think that, you know, the glory is not worthy to be compared with the suffering. The suffering is not worthy to be compared with the glory that should be revealed in us. I know it seemed hard at the time, but it was such a long time ago. It was such a short space of time. I know, you know, there's a whole book about it, and at that time I was really struggling. I thought God was cruel. Boy, look around. You think he's cruel? Because I don't see him being cruel. I see him being very gracious toward us. I see him being a tremendous benefit. I see him being like a really good God. But here, he's just saying, he's just speaking out of his heart. Oh, he's been cruel to me. With thy strong hand thou opposest thyself against me. Thou liftest me up to the wind. thou causest me to ride upon it and dissolvest my substance. He feels like all his stuff's been dissolved. You know what I mean? It's all gone. He doesn't have any of it anymore. For I know that thou wilt bring me to death into the house appointed for all living. That's true. But not yet, Job. Not yet. You got a lot of life left to go. You know, he's thinking he's hanging on by a string. He's in God's hands. He ain't going anywhere. He's got a long, blessed life ahead of him yet. Howbeit he will not stretch out his hand to the grave, though they cry out in his destruction. Did not I weep for him that was in trouble? Was not my soul grieved for the poor? When I looked for good, then evil came unto me. And when I waited for light, there came darkness. Now, he's getting awful close to, he's saying, look, I helped people. I was there for people. And now it's my turn and nobody's here for me. How can this be a good thing? He's coming awful close to accusing God of not being. Look at verse 25. I mean, what's he saying this all for? Did not I weep for him that was in trouble? Was not my soul grieved for the poor? What good did it do me? Because when I looked for good, then evil came unto me. I should have been paid off in kind. I was kind to people. How come they're not kind to me? Then evil came unto me. And when I waited for light, there came darkness. Now, look at verse 21 again. Thou art become cruel to me. This is his case against God. Again, he's just being honest. But he's not correct. I know it would seem that way. And when people are going through a struggle, it seems that way. My bowels boiled. I don't even want to go there, okay? Let's just keep going. Except bowels are kind of fun to talk about sometime. But listen, a boiling bowels is not, that's not the line I'm standing in, okay? I want some of that. No. Whatever it is, whatever medical condition that is, it's not one that would bless you, okay? Boiling bowel syndrome. Okay. My bowels boiled and rested not. Okay, that's enough said, Fred. Let's keep moving. The days of affliction prevented me. I went mourning without the sun. I stood up and I cried in the congregation. I am a brother to dragons and a companion to owls. My skin is black upon me. I got boiling bowels and black skin, okay? Whatever this affliction is, it's Jobitis. I don't even know. I don't even know if we have I don't know if black skin and boiling bowels is in any medical dictionary, okay? My skin is black upon me. My bones are burned with heat. He's got a high fever, obviously. My harp also is turned to mourning, and my organ into the voice of them that weep. Pipe is what organ means, like a flute is the idea, okay? Verse 31. And he's still going on, and look at what he says here. I made a covenant with my eyes. Why then should I think upon a maid? It's not for secret sin. It's not like I'm lascivious guy. It's not like I'm Job the Luster. It's not like I'm all Aqualung. I used to say that. Everyone knew what I was talking about. Jeff Otell's song, Aqualung, the whole LP, but back when they had albums. That was a CD, of course. But Aqualung, he's sitting on a park bench eyeing little girls with evil intent. It means lascivious. It means perverted. And he's saying, I don't do that. I'm in a covenant with my eyes. Why then should I look upon a maid? Because I know God sees my heart. I know I get this. Jesus comes along and says, you know, you've heard it said, don't commit adultery. But I tell you, if you've even thought about it in your mind, all you are is an adulterer who's either lacked courage or opportunity. But you're an adulterer just the same as far as I'm concerned. You had the intent there, and that's enough for a conviction. Job gets that. He says, I wouldn't do that. No, I made a covenant with my eyes. Then why should I think upon a maid? It's not secret sin that got me any more than it's been overt sin. He's still making his case, see? By the way, men, make a covenant with your eyes. And I think that's about ladies, too. Make a covenant with your eyes. Can a man take fire in his bosom and not be burned? Or a woman? Or equal opportunity here? The answer is no. The answer is no. You can't be like that and have it not affect you. It will in ways that you didn't even intend. It will affect your devotional life. It will affect your relationship. Even though, like, oh, you know, I'm cool, and I'm just like, I like scope out all the chicks, but I'm like really sophisticated. My wife never sees me or catches me. Even if that were true, and I doubt it, women are generally smarter than that. It's affecting you on a spiritual level that you can't even discern. You can't even figure it out. And you're wondering, like, how come she's always crabby? How come she's always angry? How come she doesn't trust me? How come she... Because she's not trustful. And you've made her mad and angry and stuff like that in probably ways you don't even understand. You can't take fire in your bosom and not be burned. Make that covenant with your eyes. I think Job here, and I'm not talking about it in some legalistic sense. I'm really not a legalistic guy. I think this is wisdom. I have some friends who do this very, very good, and I have some friends who will need a lot of work. But let's keep moving. For what portion of God is there from above, and what inheritance of the Almighty from on high? Is not destruction to the wicked, and a strange punishment to the workers of iniquity? Doth not he see my ways and count all my steps? Look, I understand that guilty people get punished by God sometimes. But doesn't he see what I'm doing? Verse 4, doesn't he see my ways and count all my steps? What ways? What steps? I made a covenant with my eyes that I'm not even going to look at a maid. He's a rich guy. He could have women throw themselves at him to get, you know, if you have like unspeakable wealth, does women come around? There are some women who like that. He had plenty of opportunities, but I never did that. Doesn't God notice that stuff? Doesn't he see my ways and count all my steps? The answer to that question, by the way, Job, let's not leave it rhetorical. Yeah, he does. Yeah, he does. If I have walked with vanity, or if my foot hath hasted to deceit, let me be weighed in an even balance that God may know my integrity. Again, he's saying, he's making his case. If my step hath turned out of the way, and mine heart walked after my eyes, and if any blot have cleaved to my hands, then let me sow and let another eat. Yea, let my offspring be rooted out. Now, he's going to say all these things. Everyone else is getting nervous, I mean, because he's calling down some. It's kind of like, almost like, you know, if this has happened, let it just be, and some really strong language here. If I've done this, well, let this happen. If I'm not saying the truth about this, you know what I mean? He's saying, well, let's just see what he says. Look at this. If mine heart have been deceived by a woman, or if I have laid wait at my neighbor's door, the idea is wait till the husband's gone so I can go in and, you know, do fornication and all this good stuff there, which is not so good at all, then let my wife grind unto another and let others bow down upon her. Clear enough language and poetic enough so that we don't have to be too graphic. If I have been an adulterer, let somebody else take advantage of my situation. Let somebody else grind upon just like it sounds, you know what I mean? Bow down, you can go there where you will. This is what he's saying. If that's the case, I'm telling you, I've made a covenant with my eyes that I won't even look upon me. If I've been outside the door waiting for the husband to leave so I can have an adulterous affair, well, let somebody cheat on me. Let me be the guy whose wife is cheating on him, if that's the case. It's strong language, is it not? For this is a heinous crime. Yeah, it is iniquity to be punished by the judges. Oh, it is, too. You know, in ancient cultures, adultery is always punishable by death, even outside of Israel. You know, when Abraham goes down to Egypt, and he's got this, like, wife who I guess is a mega babe, even though it's like she's very old, and he says, tell him, you're my sister. You know why? Because they didn't do adultery. They just murdered the husband if they wanted the wife, and now they got her. No adultery, no problem. And so he's like, this might not go so well for me. So I'm not saying he took the coward's way out, to be sure, but even having said that, you should understand that even ancient cultures, it is a heinous crime. And it is iniquity to be punished by the judges. For it is a fire that consumeth to destruction and would root out all of mine increase. What is a fire? Adultery. Can a man take fire in his bosom and not be burned? He didn't say it that way, but he understands it. He said, if I touch fire, if I play with fire, boy, I'm going to get burned here. If I did despise the cause of my manservant over my maidservant when they contended with me, what then shall I do when God riseth up, when he visiteth? What shall I answer him? Look at my maidservant. My manservant came to me, and they said, hey, listen, I got a contention. I got a bone to pick with you. And you said, okay, what is it? And stuff like that. If I understood they were right, I had to give them what they, you know, I've been working 16 hours a day, 12 days a week, and I've worked my fingers to the bone, and this new hire gets twice as much. And no, okay, I'll make it right. He said, if I didn't do that, wouldn't he contend with me? Wouldn't he be right? But he's saying, I did all that stuff. Wouldn't what then shall I do when God riseth up? When he visiteth, what shall I answer him? Because the idea is God, you're right. So he made people whole. He made them, he answered them in such a way, you know, shut up. You don't like it? Well, hit the bricks, mister, because I have plenty of people who would love to have your job. It's unrighteous. Employers do that. It's unrighteous. With not whole good from them to whom it is due, when it is in the power of thy hand to do it. Workman's worthy of his hire. But now, if they've got the upper hand, they're holding all the cards because unemployment is double digits or something like that. So you're going to have to work, you know, 12 hours a day, you know, and more besides, you know. I want you to work at least 7 days a week, you know, 16 hours or more, plus some overtime, you know. But you're not going to get paid overtime. If you don't like it, hey, I got another guy here that he can take your place and you'll be gone just like that. It's wrong. It's wrong. He said, I would never do that. Well, how could I answer God? And by the way, how are people going to answer God when it's their turn to be judged? But they're going to say, well, that was the law. That's weak. That's weak. Did not he that made me in the womb make him? Yes. Yes, Job, they did. He did. And did not one fashion us in the womb? If I have withheld the poor from their desire, or have caused the eyes of the widow fail, or if I have eaten my morsel myself alone, and the fatherless hath not eaten thereof, again, it's if then, for from my youth he was brought up with me as with a father, and I have guided her from my mother's womb. Look, I got this when I was a child, when I was old enough to remember. My mommy used to tell me, hey, be good to the poor. Be help the downtrodden. You know, people who can't help themselves, be there for them. You know, be that Johnny on the spot that can bless them. I have known this all my life, and I've always done it, he says. If I have seen any perish for want of clothing, or any poor without covering, if his loins have not blessed me, and if he were not warmed with the fleece of my sheep, if I have lifted up my hand against the fatherless, when I saw my help in the gate, then let my arm fall from my shoulder blade, and my arm be broken from the bone. It's imprecatory. He's like, if I was that miserable slob who let people go naked and hungry, rip my arm off, God. It's strong. I know all his friends are going, you know, and like they're giving him a wide because when the lightning falls. But he's saying what really happened. He's just telling like it is, and he's answering them. You think God's getting me, but not so much, guys. Then let my arm fall from my shoulder, and my arm be broken from the bone, for destruction from God was a terror to me. And by reason of his highness, I could not endure. If I have made gold my hope, or have said to the fine gold, thou art my confidence. Did he do that? No, he's saying I didn't do that. He has a lot of wealth. Again, it's not sin to have wealth. He doesn't have, he's just not using it like as a god. My hope isn't in gold. He's saying my hope is in God. If I have said to fine gold, thou art my confidence. If I rejoice because my wealth is great and because my hand hath gotten much. If I beheld the sun when it shined, or the moon walking in brightness, and my heart hath been secretly enticed, or my mouth hath kissed my hand, a phrase there I'm not exactly sure what it means, this also were iniquity to be punished by the judge, for I should have denied the God that is above. But I haven't. I've trusted in God the whole time. I haven't been trusting in gold. Oh, I got some gold, I got some wealth, but I've always trusted in God. And I hope it's the same with you. If God blesses you, and you know what? No doubt he will. I mean, you know, you show up every day, you work hard, you don't steal. That puts you in the severe minority already, right? Right? So you get promoted. They think, well, let's put this guy in charge of stuff because he's capable. He's, you know, we never accused him of sexual harassment. He doesn't leave the job early. He's always working hard. He's always doing, or she is always where they are supposed to be, doing what they're supposed to be doing. Hey, let's promote them. It's good. And God will bless you with gold and with wealth and with, that's a good thing. Don't start trusting in the wealth. God bless you, and the thing that he blessed you with now is a rival. It's a rival with him for your heart. That ain't quite right. You know what I mean? He said, I haven't done that. And if I have, that's something to be punished by the judge. For I should have denied the God that is above. If I rejoice in the destruction of him that hated me, or lifted up myself when evil found him. Don't do that. When God's getting your enemy, don't say, aha, he'll stop. He'll withdraw his hand from him. That's not something we do. We don't, you know, there but for the grace of God go I. He should have gotten me. He didn't. He got Jesus on my behalf. And when he's getting somebody, because they've just, in such and such a place where they're finally, they're getting their comeuppance, that's, he understands that as a wicked thing. If I rejoice in the destruction of him that hated me, or lifted up myself when evil found him, lifted up myself, kind of like, you know, guy walking around strutting, yeah, see, he's getting what he deserves. He's inferring to his about his friends, too, here, by the way, I think. Neither have I suffered my mouth to sin by wishing a curse to his soul. If the men of my tabernacle said not, oh, that we had of his flesh, we cannot be satisfied. The stranger did not lodge in the street, but I opened my doors to the traveler. He's got all the bases covered. Guys in the street, you know, going from town to town, they didn't have any, you know, Motel, you know, 8 and whatever, Tom Baudet. He's not going to leave the light on for you, right? He said, I took care of him. I brought him in my house. I fed him, right? If I covered my transgression as Adam by hiding my iniquity in my bosom, isn't that something? He gets it. So he knows about Adam, right? Well, everyone after Adam should know about Adam. But he hid his iniquity. What did he do? Fig leaves. Religion, if you ask me. Covering ourselves, right? Making a covering for ourselves. That's what religion is all about. Trying to make by our own hand what we built ourselves presentable by God. It's the heart of religion. Fig leaves equals religion. Really? Yeah. My thinking. Jesus is still cursing fig trees. Why? Why? No fruit? No fruit? And he says that if I covered my transgression as Adam by hiding my iniquity in my bosom, did I fear a great multitude, or did the contempt of families terrify me that I kept silence and went not out of the door? Oh, that one would hear me. Job, you're going to have your answer. Job, you're going to have your answer. Oh, that one would hear me. Behold, my desire is that the Almighty would answer me. Job, you're playing the part of a prophet now. He's going to square up with you. He's going to tell you some stuff. I don't know, it's going to be kind of uncomfortable for you to go through. You don't know exactly what you're asking for, but God has heard, and God's going to answer, and God's going to show up. And that my adversary had written a book, oh, they have, surely I would take it upon my shoulder and bind it as a crown to me. I would declare unto him the number of my steps, as a prince would I go near unto him. Why would you do that? Don't you realize he knows all that? Would I make my case to God, who has the very hairs of my head numbered? Would I point out stuff to him that he's like overlooked? Hey, I was a father to the fatherless. I blessed them. I didn't leave them in the street, and I lodged them. And he's like, oh, right. I forgot about that. All right, good. I'm just going to score one for you. Here he's saying it. I would declare unto him the number of my steps. As a prince would I go near unto him. No, Job, old buddy, you have no idea what you're saying. I think people say the same thing. When I see God, I'm going to give him a piece of my mind. The people who say that can least afford it. But they're going to drag God to some court in the sky called fairness and make him answer. Yeah, it is laughable. I would, as a prince would I go near unto him. Not so much, Job. You'll see. If my land cry against me, or that the furrows likewise thereof complain. If I have eaten the fruits thereof without money, or have caused the owners thereof to lose their life, let the thistle grow instead of wheat, and cockle instead of barley. The words of Job are ended. Now Job's all done. We've heard last of Job. I think we got 6 chapters of Elihu. I'm not exactly. I can't exactly remember. And then God shows up in chapter 38. So it is 6 chapters, and it's going to be five chapters of the book, and it's going to be kind of fun reading. But we're almost done. I know that a lot of this is kind of tedious. The language is, but obviously it's 42 chapters of what? Why suffering? Why these things happening beyond our understanding? At the end of it, God shows up and says, "You know what? I'm God. You can't figure it out. Let Daddy drive, okay?" I understand things that you could never understand. Let's pray. you can stand, and Matt's going to come, and he's going to sing, and we'll have an opportunity to worship. It's a difficult book. We've admitted that right along, but there are lessons here, Lord, that I think we've understood. In this life, we're going to have some joy, we're going to have some suffering. Hopefully more joy than suffering, but it's not really contingent upon anything except your sovereignty very often. Very often, the wicked get away with stuff. I mean, at least for a while. And very often, Lord, the righteous go without. But in the end of all things, Lord, you're God. You're gonna balance all the scales. And we, like Paul, we reckon that the sufferings of this present age are not worthy to be compared with the glory that shall be revealed in us. We thank and praise you for this book and for these ideas and these thoughts that are in our head. And you're a good God. At the end of the day, Lord, I can say with certainty you're a good God. You're a gracious Heavenly Father. You're worthy to be praised. Because, you know, Lord, here's the thing, what I always think about. I never got what I deserved. Jesus got what I deserved. And I thank and praise you for this great salvation you've given to us. We thank and praise you in Jesus' name.